Hello, my name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. Today on With Respect, our guest will be Sean Wiggins. Sean is a performer extraordinaire around the country and around the world. She has a wide range of music and patter in her band, One Goat, all right, I love that one already, is her backup. We'll be talking to her about music. We'll be talking about audiences around the country and around the world. And we'll just find out who she is, what she's about. Sean Wiggins, With Respect. We'll be right back. So, Sean, how are you today?
I am just fine, a little warm, but... Just
oh, poor baby. Where are you at? Where do we catch you at?
I live in Santa Clarita, California, which is about 45 minutes north of Hollywood.
All right. Okay, I can see you. I'm glad you're warm. That's comfortable. We like warm when we get it here.
you don't have enough of it. No. I have plenty.
So, where are you from originally?
I grew up in New York City. In Manhattan.
All right. And how about family, mom, dad, brothers, sisters?
My family's from back east, and I have a brother, and pretty much from the Connecticut, New York area, so pretty much all of my family hails from that side of the country. And then I managed to make it out here just because New York City was a little bit frightening. Or a young, sort of naive girl.
Oh, and California is different? Oh, I love that one. That's great.
So. Yeah, California, it is different. It's at least it's the scariness is a little more masked. In New York, it's a little more in your face. So I like it when it's, you know, behind my back.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I dated a woman from California many years ago, and when we started off, I think it was the second date, she said, "Now, John, I want you to understand, I'm a California girl." Oh, yeah? What does that mean? I'm thinking Beach Boys and that sort of... No, no. She said, we California girls, we don't make deep commitments.
Really?
Second date. Okay, right. So I never could figure out exactly what she meant by that. Later on, she went on to describe it this way. She said, "When I told my friends I was coming back to the Midwest to go to school," she is a lawyer, "they said, how can you possibly go to the Midwest? I mean, it's they're all boring people. They're just, you know, cow-fed, or what do you call it, corn-fed people." Right. And she said, "I came out here with bad expectations, and when I got here, I found out that I really like Midwesterners. I like the area. I like the friendships. They're deep friendships. They're lasting, And you don't make as many as you do out in California, but they're much deeper." I have no idea whether that's true or not, but that was one person's observation.
I find it to be true. I actually find it hard to make friends out here. It's harder to make friends out here because the people I meet, a lot of the people are in the entertainment business, so everybody is looking over your shoulder to see who's the next person they can meet.
Oh, yeah.
So... It's a little harder to make real friends, and I started playing in the Chicago, like greater Chicago area, in about 2000, and have made some of my most long-lasting friendships and deepest friendships from that time.
That's interesting.
I mean, I have better friends in the Midwest than I have in California.
Well, you know, that's interesting. You mentioned the looking over the shoulder business. I was in politics and government for a number of years, quite a few years, and that's what happens. There's too many of the people in that realm that you go to a cocktail party, you go to a rally, you go to a county meeting or something, and half of them, the ones who are running for office or are in office, they spend their time looking over your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who else can I talk to? In fact, one congressman once said to me, "Well, John, I tell you what, I'm no votes here," meaning me, because he figured he already had my vote.
Right.
And I said, this was after, like, basically hello, and all of a sudden his eyes are wandering to someplace else. And I said, "No, we'll call him Bill. Bill, here's the deal. We have a conversation." And he's still looking over my shoulder, and he's, yeah. And I said, "No, a conversation goes like this. Bill, what kind of a day is it?" "Oh, gee, John, it's a wonderful day. Bill, how's the crops this year?" "Oh, they're wonderful if we get through the drought." I mean, so you have a, I said, "Bill, you have a conversation with people."
Right.
And he looked at me, and he just had this vacuous stare and said, "Oh, yeah, right. Now I got to go over here."
Exactly. That's exactly how it is here.
Well, all right. You didn't get there automatically. You started someplace. You started in Manhattan, I guess. And how did you get into music, for pity's sakes?
I sort of popped out of the womb singing, honestly. Even when I went to camp as a kid, I would sing my tent to sleep. I actually had memorized all of the play Jesus Christ Superstar and
oh,
would sing all of it to my tent mates at night. They didn't seem to mind.
I was going to say, I'm not sure I can figure out which of the songs in Jesus Christ Superstar would be a kind of a lullaby, but whatever.
There are a couple.
Okay, there you go.
So it just, I've always liked to write poetry, and then I always liked to sing, and I actually, my growing up is a little more complicated than New York City, because for high school, I actually went to boarding school in Oregon.
That makes sense, sure. It flows from one coast to the other, yeah.
Yeah, New York City to Oregon. I was very worried about the cows when I moved to Oregon. I was worried that nobody was watching them. Because I came from New York City. So I'm very concerned about the lack of cow supervision in Oregon.
You weren't by any chance looking for brown cows for chocolate milk. And what?
I probably was, actually. I got over it quickly. As we actually had at the school, had real cow milk, which
All right.
was just pasteurized and not homogenized. And it's quite something. I wasn't that into it, actually.
So
it had to grow on me.
And you were singing from day one of your life on this earth, and what were you singing? Now, you said Jesus Christ Superstar, all right? That's a Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, right?
Right, right.
All right. What attracted you to music? What kind of music really turned you on in those days when you're starting off?
My dad was an avid jazz listener,
mm-hmm.
so I was listening to Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald and that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
Nina Simone and that kind of stuff. So I was exposed to great jazz singers sort of to start off, and then my also Bonnie Raitt and Linda Ronstadt and Fleetwood Mac, those guys my parents were listening to. So that's kind of what I was exposed to. But
okay.
But then I went to school and was doing Gilbert and Sullivan plays, and I went to Episcopalian school in New York, and so hymns were fun to sing too, and I loved that. So it's
mm-hmm.
kind of a eclectic mishmash.
Well, you know, that's interesting because you hit on two things that are three things that I find interesting in your musical background. First of all, Andrew Lloyd Webber is I love him. He's got great music. He puts together good stage productions, Evita and what else? Starlight Express and so on. Great musicals. But he also had a mass that he did. And the song, the Agnus Dei in that piece, is so beautiful. It plays, I hear it in many different stations of different kinds, not just classical stations, but I hear that Agnus Dei sung by a boy tenor, I guess, is what the one they record, initially recorded with. Beautiful, beautiful music. Completely different than some of the other works he's done.
Huh, you'll have to turn me on to that. Point me in the right direction to find it, because I haven't heard it.
And the other one is, I love the operetta thing, because when I was in high school and college, we did operettas, and I got to love Gilbert and Sullivan. They're just just great. They're funny. They're hilariously funny, even when they're not modernized, and you have to know the humor of the day. But they're great. They're great fun, and the music's fun.
Yes, a ton of fun, and great practice for singing, and it's fun to sing. The melodies are enjoyable.
And then finally, the church music. There is a wide variety of church music that's out there, starting from Gregorian chant and going on through some of the modern things in the various churches. But in the middle, there's some of the greatest composers in history did many of their great works with various religious themes, Bach and Beethoven, Mozart, and so on. I got to tell you, some of the great experiences I had. In fact, one of the greatest experiences I had with music was I was in Vienna, and I was on a Sunday, and I paid to go to a mass at the Vienna Choir Boys were going to perform at one of their castles, a chapel in a castle. It was a spectacular experience. It was beautiful singing, beautiful voice, and it was in German. What could I do? at any rate, it's interesting that you have this. You started off with this wide background, but where did you develop it to?
Well, but just as an aside to what you were just saying there, an interesting thing. I was in a choir, a private choir in New York City. I moved back to New York City after high school, and we actually performed another piece by Handel where he had inserted the Hallelujah chorus into another piece.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so and supposedly this was not an unusual thing, that composers would do that. They'd take a snippet out of one of their other pieces and stick it into another one where it seemed appropriate. I haven't run into that before, but...
No, I never knew. And both the Hallelujah chorus and the Messiah that it came from and Handel generally are one of my favorites. I love it.
Yeah, it was great fun. I got to sing I sang at Lincoln Center with this particular choir and around New York City in some of the older church, like large churches, more, in between a cathedral and your corner church kind of thing from the 1800s,
Well, we're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Sean Wiggins, who is a singer. Now we also find out she's a poet and a devotee of music since birth, and a wide range of the kinds of music she's interested in. And we'll be talking more now about her life after Manhattan. This is John Smetanka, Run With Respect, and we'll be right back. Now back on With Respect with Sean Wiggins, a singer born in Manhattan and ended up, because she was shy, out in California, out on the coast. So she's got a leg in both coasts, and she's got her best friends in the Midwest. So what more can you ask for in a person?
Yeah, I've got it kind of covered.
You do. This is John Smetanka, Run With Respect. So Sean, you just sang in choirs in Lincoln Center. That's very impressive. That is very impressive. Some of the great performers and performances have been there in the Lincoln Center. So What topped that? What did you go to from there?
Well, that was just so different. You know, that was a small private choir. So just an unusual experience. I mean, since then I've played, I mean, to this year I will do 210 gigs or probably around there. And I've been playing ever since during high school I started off playing professionally. So I haven't stopped since. So there's been just so many shows around the United States and around here, and yeah, it's hard to say. Each one has their own sort of special flair.
Well, I'm not going to ask you how many years since you left high school, but I am.
Thank you.
I am going to ask you about 210 shows a year.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that you don't have a pet cow back home that's not being taken care of because of the schedule.
No, I have a tiny parrot, as a matter of fact, and he doesn't require a whole lot of work.
What started you doing this as a way of making a living? I mean, I'm fascinated. Did you go to college? Let's start with that.
Well, I went to UCLA for one quarter, and I got in from Oregon. It's actually very hard to get into the music department if you're not from California.
Hmm.
So I made it into the music department, and the first day I sat down and there was a professor there, and he started to ask us a bunch of questions, and he put on a record and he said, well, write down what, take dictation of this music down that I'm playing. And we all looked at him cross-eyed because we were all just finished high school and weren't at that level of, you know, we were just learning. We wanted to learn music and we weren't at that level. And he basically looked at us and said, if you can't already do this, then you should give up.
Oh, my heavens.
Yeah. And they were only teaching, my vocal instructor only was an opera teacher, which was fine. I was very interested in that. But I had been singing jazz for the last 4 years, and she considered jazz to basically be music from the devil. Mm-hmm. And, like, that she actually sort of said that. And I just decided that it wasn't the place for me, and I moved back to New York to study privately with a bunch of different people. I studied opera, I studied Broadway, I took dance lessons, I took acting classes, so I sort of made my own school.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't really interested in anything else but music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, performing arts.
So when did you do your first professional gig? That is, you actually got paid to do singing or
playing? I was 16.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I was actually in a jazz combo in Oregon in my high school, and we would go out and play festivals and clubs and around in Oregon, the Portland area, the greater Portland area.
I had a friend, I have a friend who is a federal judge, and he, in his earlier life, when he was in college, he and his buddies decided to go around and sing around, I think they were down in Ohio someplace, Ohio Wesleyan or something like that. And he, this little group of people, four of them, they played together throughout college, and when they finished college, they all went their different ways, became professionals or whatever they became. But they did just what you did. On weekends, only they didn't do 210 shows in a year, but on the weekends they would go around and sing in college groups and pubs and whatnot, and they called themselves the Highwaymen.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, the original
wow.
Highwaymen. And as Steve told the story on my show some time ago, later on when he was a federal judge, Court of Appeals judge, by the real top-level judge, a group of, he called them broken-down singers, decided to take to get together and do a tour as the Highwaymen. They weren't his Highwaymen. And so he and his original Highwaymen sued them for infringement on a copyright, the title the Highwaymen. And the lawsuit went on, and finally one of those broken down singers called him up and said, "Say, Judge, can't we solve this problem? This is taking a lot of time. Can't we work this out?" And so they worked it out. And so the old highwayman and the new highwayman did a benefit performance out in L.A. For charity on the same stage. And the old broken down, the new highwayman, broken down singers were Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, and I'm missing one, and I can't remember the fourth. And he said it was a great experience. We had a load of fun. So,
An amazing experience, a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So now, where did you find most of your work? Because now I know that you do 210 gigs a year. That's a lot of time on the road. Unless you're doing them in your home community.
For my parrot.
Yeah, with your parrot. I mean, you take your parrot on the road with you? I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe it's the shtick that people would appreciate.
Yeah, he stays home, but these days I'm mostly in California.
Mm-hmm.
And I travel from San Diego to San Francisco, which is a large amount of space.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I spend a lot of time in my car, and I have a life that half of it is spent on the road. It hasn't always been like that. I was doing a lot of traveling around the United States playing really only my original tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very rewarding, though not well compensated.
Yeah, and you do have to pay for parrot bills, for feeding.
I do. I have to feed him.
Yeah, much less yourself.
Much less myself. It's very funny to take your parrot to the doctor. And if you've ever seen a bird x-ray, it's very funny. It looks like they put him on an old Xerox machine and put the cover down. If you can imagine that. But I digress. But yeah, I mean, I used to do a lot more traveling around, and now it's mostly here. And when I do travel, it's to the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really my other hub, though I'm thinking about getting it going more again. I have a lot of people who want me to come to their areas around this country, and they're bugging me, so I'm feeling the pull. I might need to get out and do that again.
Well, let me at this point say I've heard you sing. I've heard you perform, and your band, The One Goat. Right? One Goat?
It's actually Lone Goat.
Lone Goat, sorry.
The reason it's confusing is the way we spell it. With the capitalization, and it's just making fun of me. When I type, I randomly capitalize, so it looks like One Goat.
Well, all right, but I saw you perform at a local winery, and I thought you've got a lot going for you in a number of different ways. The music is great. You also have a good presence with the audience that I found interesting. And the third thing that I found interesting was that the audience itself was a varied audience. There were people there who were in cowboy boots and cowboy hats. There were people who were with their families, and they were obviously, I visit with a number of different people who were professionals from the local area, who were just family folks, wherever they worked. A wide variety in the audience, which I thought was very interesting, because you got a lot of audience response. A lot of those people we talked about, my family and I talk about when you come after you've given a talk someplace and people come up and say, "You were a great American, that was a great, great talk." But you got a lot of great Americans from the audience, people coming up and saying they loved your music and whatnot. How did this develop? Where did you get this personality that appeals to such a wide range of people and a wide range of music? Now, I know that we've already talked about your religious and your operettas and whatnot, but what is the Sean Wiggins style? How did it come about?
Well, I think the camaraderie or the appeal maybe to different... To to many different types of people is more that I just really enjoy people. I enjoy meeting new people, and I enjoy all kinds of people, and it makes me happy to share with all kinds of people. And I feel kind of my job is to bring joy to people. I mean, it sounds silly, or maybe it sounds not silly, but, you know, like I'm just giving lip service, but really it is my job. My job isn't about me. It's not about look at me, look at me, look at me. It's about what am I sharing and how can I make this a good day for the people who are sitting in front of me. And I actually do feel that way. So I think that it comes across, and that's what I've been told. Just yesterday, somebody told me, I did a gig yesterday, and this an old friend of mine I haven't really seen in probably 10 years, and she said to me, I walked in here, and I was just having kind of a blah day, and I was feeling blah, and I had promised you I was going to come, so I came, but I didn't really want to come, and I'm leaving joyful. And I thought that was the best compliment I could have received, and that's sort of my goal, and I think maybe growing up in New York City, you have to rub elbows and sit next to people on buses and sweat next to people. And, you know, you really get close to humanity when you live in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And that may have been where it all kind of started, in that you can't just have a, you know, bad attitude. You have or you'll just feel bad. You'll just have a bad day. You know, if you interact with people well and communicate well, then you have a better time. And I started off being very close to a lot of humanity. You know.
That'll do it to you. That will do it to you.
Probably that's where it started.
Well, but there's another thing. There is in performers, I've seen many, many, many performers over my life who are doing solos or part of groups. Chad and Jeremy were out, an old group that is still out touring, and talked to Jeremy afterwards, and he's a British guy. He's a nobleman, or at least a peer in Britain. He's an actor and whatnot. But I watched him talking to people in the audience, and I watched him gauge the kinds of people who were sitting out there. And I watched you do the same thing, only you did it more instinctively than I think than Jeremy did. That instinctive understanding of the audience is something, I wonder if you acquired it only by rubbing elbows in New York.
Because
there you get tough people, you know. You don't necessarily bond with people you rub shoulders with in the subway, I wouldn't think.
You're right. I have played all over the United States, and I've spent a lot of time in, I spent time in Houston and in Dallas and in Atlanta and all around, northern, the Northeast, and then the Midwest, and then all over California. And honestly, California has a lot of different types of, it's not only LA.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I do try to play to the people who are in front of me. And I have run into all kinds of people and get along with all kinds of people. So I do actually notice, you're right. If I have a crowd that responds more to country music, I'll lean it in that direction. You know, if I have a crowd that wants more rock and roll, I'll lean it in that direction. So, and then even probably the patter and, you know, how I'm interacting will vary, absolutely.
So what's
I think that just comes from a lot of shows.
Well, starting with 210 shows and gigs in a year is a head start on a lot of shows.
Yeah.
What do you notice about the difference? Well, I tell you, we'll take a break now, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about, first of all, briefly about the difference in audiences around the country and other places that you've also performed overseas, I think. Or at least you have credits over there. But we'll come back and talk about those and about your music. This is John Smetanka. We're on With Respect, and we're talking to Sean Wiggins, a performer of many different kinds of music, but especially given to personal appearances and personal mixing and identification with audiences that does she does very well at. We'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Sean Wiggins, a singer born in Manhattan, went to camp and sang people to sleep in the tents with Jesus Christ Superstar, which I've got to say is the first time I've ever heard that being done, and now a performer around the country and I think around the world. This is John Smetanker. As I say, we're on With Respect. So, Sean, when we broke, you were talking about the various cities that you performed in, and you continue to perform in. What's the difference, if there is such, there may not be, between, say, the audiences in Houston and the audiences in New York and the audiences in the Midwest or L.A. or San Francisco? Is there a definable difference when you line up? I'm going to go to Houston tonight. Are you thinking, I know the general zeitgeist of this audience, and the same thing with San Francisco. Do you do that? How do you adjust that?
I definitely think about it. Whether or not I'm right or not will be, I'll find out when I get there. But I think it's more, I mean, Texas is its own thing. Houston is... It depends. It honestly depends where and mm-hmm. where I'm playing, but mm-hmm. it does make a difference. The big cities, especially on the West Coast, say San Francisco or L.A., I know what I'm in for.
Mm-hmm.
And it is different than Houston or than the Midwest. I find that anywhere other than the big cities over here are hard. Because as I mentioned earlier, everybody's in the entertainment business, or a lot of people are, and they're not very, they're thinking about themselves. They're not really open to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Midwest and the South, Texas and when I played in Atlanta, the audience is very open. It's just easier to read and easier to interact, and have a better time right off the bat. I have to work a little harder when I'm in L.A. or San Francisco or like D.C., New York City, the big city, the big mm-hmm. metropolises. Mm-hmm. It's just different. The rest of the country, though, and even around here, it's just your everyday people who have everyday jobs and everyday lives. Are kind of similar. They're not that. It's not that different.
Mm-hmm.
And they're more open to exchanging and to listening to you and telling you, what they want. It's easier going. It's more open. So it's way easier to read and easier to put a show together.
Well, one of the things I was when I was U.S. attorney, I had occasion to be in many parts of the country, but one of the places that found was different than I thought it was going to be was Nashville. I was expecting this to be all country western music, and that was it. Quite the contrary. Yes, it's a music town, mm-hmm. but there's a wide range of kinds of music that the people who are performing it end up there.
Yeah,
and it's many of the recording studios are there. A wise catch for Nashville to get into that routine, but it strikes me that we are a country of 10,000 miles from northwest to southeast. We are a country of islands and Hawaii, which is radically different than New York. There's this wide range of things which are held together, however, by certain cultural things. When I talk to legal audiences, I'll talk about the the basic idea of what it is to be an American, that is, you know, the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, and so on. But and also the English language holds this together. But there's also the culture of music. And this is something that when I teach overseas, I find that so many of my students in Europe were raised on American music, and they live it. It was in the Czech Republic where I teach, some of the middle-aged people will talk about the music industry. American music gave them a sense of freedom. It bonded them and get them ready to accept and to want to be separated from the communist oligarchy.
Wow. That's interesting.
So music, you're part of the exchange of culture. You're creating and you're participating in the blending of culture around this country. And you're bringing together the wide range of people. And, you know, I think that's great. I think that's your industry. And to the extent that you get together and talk to people, that is not just make records, okay?
Yeah.
Maybe that isn't economically feasible anymore.
Not really.
Yeah. But it's great. I think that this is a great contribution to our culture and our country.
And I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head there in terms of what makes all of the places I play similar is that I pick a bunch of cover tunes that I play. They're all my favorite tunes that I play. And I'll play everything from, you know, a Simon and Garfunkel tune to an Alan Jackson tune to an AC/DC tune, you know. And so I'll cover a really wide, you know, to Janis Joplin, to Steeler's Wheel, you know. But I pick all of my favorite songs that I really love. And then there's always somebody in the audience who really loves them, becomes sort of infectious. Everybody doesn't love every song, but I'll have a song that at least everyone will be satisfied at some point that was one of their favorite songs.
Yep.
And it brings everybody together, and then I can throw my songs in, and it gives them a point of reference that I sang something that they loved, and then I brought in one of my songs, and it really does sort of just tie it all together where it all kind of works.
Well, you bond your audience together. That's what I watched.
Yeah.
I listened to you when you performed at the winery, but I also watched the audience, and I watched the audience react to various kinds of music you did covers. And by the way, for those like me, who toward the gigs and covers are a learned dialect.
Oh yes, sorry.
A gig is a performance, but one place, and a cover is somebody else's song, as you say, like Simon and Garfunkel. You re-sing there, and you put your own interpretation on it, but you take that, you cover it.
Right.
But it's interesting. The best performers that I've seen are the ones that can, with a wide range of music and a wide range of the type of people in the audience, can bring them together where, you know, I don't do hip hop. Okay. But, I'm open to learning, but that is not something that jazz. Yes. Hip hop. No. All right. But in a performance where you could take music that I'm not necessarily familiar with or comfortable with initially, but you perform it, you bring me into, and I see other people and I react. I react to the other people who are really enjoying something that I don't know yet. I love it.
Right. Yes. And I see that happen all the time, and it's fun. I enjoy it. And I actually noticed it that day because we were supposed to be a country band.
Yeah.
So we started off more country.
Yes, you did.
And then as we moved along, I could tell that we needed to sort of change it up. And then by the end, we were doing rock and roll, and everybody was dancing, and a good time was had by all.
There was one couple dancing in front of you on the little concrete slab in front of where you're performing. I don't remember them. They were not grizzled, I wouldn't say, but almost senior citizens.
Uh-huh.
But she was in a short skirt and cowboy boots, and he, as I recall, had a cowboy hat on, And they grooved on whatever song you were playing. And then it shifted into something else that is not country. And right. They still were up there dancing. I thought it was great.
I know. I love it. The responses I got at the end of that show just made me realize I need to come to the Midwest more often. And actually, I got offered some more gigs out there. So I think next year I'll be planning more shows in your area.
Good. Good. We'd love to have you here. I think that you provide great entertainment, and that's lacking. So, you know, here's the thing. When I was much younger, I was into Simon and Garfunkel. I learned Simon and Garfunkel for a silly reason, that I was going to take a woman out for a date, and she was late getting dressed, and her roommate said, "Would you go down and just play some music while she takes a while?" And I picked up this album, Bridge Over Troubled Waters, by Simon and Garfunkel. There's one song on there, So Long, Frank Lloyd Wright.
Oh, I love that song.
Isn't that a great song?
Yes, beautiful song.
It's evocative. It's a little bit odd.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing as some of their other work. But it caught me, and I became a great S&G fan. It was fun. It was fun.
That's one of my favorite of their songs. Yeah.
All right. Now, what have you done? I should say, what have you written, and what do you do as far as actually recording? Do you do recording, or just gigs?
No, I have 7 original CDs out, and I haven't performed around the world, but I have sold CDs around the world, and I write in spurts. I write when my life is. I'll suddenly have the urge to write. I don't do it all the time. I sort of sit down and make a month or two where I focus on that. But I have 7 CDs out as Sean Wiggins, or Sean Wiggins and Lone Goat, and I did a couple CDs before that with other bands. And I've sold about 10,000 of them, so...
There you go.
Yeah.
What are their names? Give me an example of their names.
Well, I have some funny ones. The latest one is Clothing Optional Fridays, just because I felt like it.
Now, is that a song, or that's just an overall title for the?
It's just an overall title.
Right.
It's just being silly.
It was good. I mean, the thought is interesting.
But I have another one called Everyday Life, and another one called The Kitchen Sink, because it's got everything from folk to country to rock. So, those are some of the titles.
What's the difference between folk and rock and country? And eventually we're going to talk about one of my favorites, which is bluegrass. But what is the difference that the first three I mentioned? Because in all those cases, there's singing, it's popular, but I don't exactly know how you define the difference.
Well, I think it's a little nebulous and a little personal, but folk is generally more sort of American. Now there's Americana as well, and I get a little confused as to what's what. But folk is generally more acoustic. Or only acoustic, with very little, electric instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually just mellower in approach and very usually more oriented towards the lyrics and a story and, you know, that sort of genre. Not that the others don't have a story, but the focus might be more on the instruments and the solos and the, you know, like rock and roll will be louder and electric, and you'll really notice that chorus, and it'll be pounded into your head a little more, and maybe you don't notice the verses as well. Possibly. and what was the other one? Folk? Oh, country. Well, country usually has a twang a little bit, you know, although today's country is more like old 80s music. 80s rock, so, you know, country used to be more, had a little bit of twang and a story that involved a pickup truck and a dog
and somebody in prison and a broke-up relationship. I know. I grew up listening to the Grand Ole Opry on one of the Chicago stations. It was every Saturday night, and before that they had a local version of that of the country western, and it was fascinating. I mean, I loved it. I could identify with the people who loved it. And this is hard to say because I also like people, and but it gave me this feel that later on, when I was at the Grand Ole Opry down in Nashville, that I could say, God, this is just like the old days. It's just like the old days. Well, we're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Shawn Wiggins, who is a performer, a composer of her own music, and she covers other songs by other composers and singers. This is John Smetanka and On With Respect, and we'll be right back. Respect with Shawn Wiggins. Shawn Wiggins, singer. It's been a bad day, long day. Shawn Wiggins, music performer and creator. This is John Smetanka on With Respect, as I said. So, Shawn, what about jazz? Jazz comes from a wholly different source, I think, than, say, country, western, or folk, traditional folk.
Absolutely. It's a lot the chordal, the use of chords, very different chords are used in jazz, and then the creation, I mean, the there's a lot of on-the-spot creation in jazz. The solos aren't written ahead of time. They happen spontaneously and change every time, and it's usually more intricate and you need a little more music appreciation sometimes to get it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to, just because I was exposed to it earlier and then at an early age, and then when I was in high school, actually I went to school with Chick Corea's kids, and for those of you who don't know him, he's an amazing jazz keyboardist.
Mm-hmm.
Contemporary, and so I played a lot of jazz because they were influenced by their dad. His kids were in the band with me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really good learning experience because it's really thinking out of the box musically, jazz for the most part.
Well, jazz is another thing which in my life I came to appreciate later. And that I probably thought when I was in high school, oh, jazz, bah, humbug. It doesn't
yeah.
make any. I mean, there's no rhythm. They're not no operetta to it. There's no Charlie and the MTA. The things that I was used to in those. But I think I ended up listening to jazz on a radio station when I was in school someplace, and same thing as I said before with Simon and Garfunkel. I just heard it and I loved it. And I began to listen to people like you explain how it works, what they do, and then these fugues that run, people do riffs and they keep on going and going, and it's they're on their own. And eventually the whole group will basically join in, help that person. Give a background to that person who's doing a solo,
yeah.
and then everybody takes turns. I mean, am I properly describing it?
Yeah, that's actually very well said. It is. It's sort of like a stream, or that you're following the flow, and they each follow each other and contribute to that. They hear what that person is doing and sort of lock in and embellish upon it and join in, and then it evolves, and they each follow each other. It's really an amazing kind of. It's like the picture is being created for you right in front of you, like the painting is being painted in front of you
mm-hmm.
in that moment.
And maybe never to be repeated in the same way.
Probably never.
Yeah.
If you're seeing it live, it's probably not going to happen exactly the same ever again.
Well, yeah. there was a movie, or pardon me, a play which I'm having a mental block on the name. It was about the four singers, great country western singer and rock singers that came together. They're all managed by a single partner out in Nashville, and they had one night when they were all together, and they performed, you know, Johnny Cash and Elvis Presley, and I'm having a block on the others. But the interesting thing was, it was a one-time, spontaneous evening where people, where these great individuals, came and performed together, and it created something unique. Mm. Now, it was repeated in the play later on, but I've always thought, wouldn't it be neat to have been in the audience when Beethoven's Ninth Symphony was performed for the first time?
Oh, I can't even imagine that. Yeah.
Or American in Paris performed, or by
Gershwin.
Mm-hmm. The blues piece that he did. Phenomenal. You just say, God, it's a happening. It's a true happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I know it's magical, and then it gets recorded and it gets put down so we can listen to it again, and we still feel we don't have that moment, but we have the joy of that creation, which mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which ties us all back together here.
So who are the
in our conversation?
So who are the people that you most enjoyed and most startlingly good people that you performed with or around or been taught by?
Oh, God. There are people you wouldn't know. I had one guy hired me for my first Top 40 band, and his name's Jerry Manfredi. And he's an amazing bass player who has been in some amazing bands that probably nobody's really, some people would have heard of. There's one that was pretty big called The Pages, mm-hmm. which Richard Page was in, that went on to become Mr. Mister.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a bass player, and he hired me in my first Top 40 band, and he taught me how to really, sing where people hear me no matter what. Like, even if they can't really hear me, they're getting it. Like, if the sound is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how to sing through bad sound, how to perform through it, how to just be a good performer no matter what's happening. I was complaining, I was young, and I can't hear myself well enough, and blah, 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 and trying to be a little diva, and he put me in my place and taught me probably one of the best lessons I've ever had for performing.
Mm-hmm.
Of sort of, you know, suck it up and do your job kind of thing. And I realized I had to, and that was reality, and was a really good thing to learn really early on. But I've played with so many amazing people who you've never heard of, and I'm sad you haven't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I did get to actually sing with Chick Corea, which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of his friends I've performed with, and it was an amazing experience as a high school student to be able to do that. So I was really lucky. But then I've did a bunch of shows here at the Greek Amphitheater in L.A. where I sang backup for K-Earth 101 is an oldies station, and at that time oldies were late 50s, 60s at that time when I did this. Now oldies are like 70s and, you know.
Oh, no. Oh, I hate to tell you this, but now oldies are the 90s. So
right. Now oldies are the 90s. So back then it was, you know, it was like 50s to early 70s was this show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I sang backup for maybe four or five of the acts. And so I sang with a lot of, like I sat down with Little Eva, who did the Locomotion.
Yeah.
Was talking to her about because Carole King wrote it, and she was actually worked for Carole King as a babysitter, and that's how she got that song. That's mm-hmm. how she met Carole King. You know, it's just interesting.
Well, you know, there is a story to every. We had a guest on who wrote a book about the blues in Chicago, how the blues got to Chicago and what the contribution was. And as she was going through, talking about the blues, she then began to talk about other people, other groups that came over, say, from England, and were in love, learned about the blues, and it infused their own music. I think one was the Rolling Stones, where they bonded. You talk about, and I know that this happens, that people who are strong individuals who are on the make, they're not necessarily, they're all looking over your shoulder. But at the same time, there are other situations and people where they bond. The performers bond with one another, and from those bonds comes great music and new music and whatnot. So it's a wonderful world if you really enjoy doing what you're doing. My mother used to say that a person whose job is their hobby and whose hobby is their job is a blessed person.
Well said, yes.
And I think it sounds like that's what you have made of your life and your work.
It's exactly it, and I am blessed. I feel truly, truly blessed. I mean, there's sometimes when I have to go make a 2.5-hour drive to go to work, and I'm not feeling it. But when I get there, and the minute I start singing, I'm happy, mm-hmm. and ready to go. And it's not a job anymore. It's a joy to me. So,
how long will you keep this up? I mean, you can't do 210 shows for the next 30 years. Even you don't have the strength in you.
Well, I just recently started going to the gym almost every day to get better at it. But, I think it will evolve naturally.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I will always do this. How I do it will evolve. And I don't imagine I'll be driving 2.5 hours to a gig and then going to another gig an hour away after that, which is what I do now. I'll do two gigs nowhere near each other in one day. And that will change. I don't need to overthink it. I think it will just occur the way it should if I'm doing what I ought to be doing and keeping myself on the right path, so to speak.
We're going to run out of time, unfortunately. There's so many other things we could talk about, but tell us about Lone, what is it? Lone, what? Your band?
Lone Goat.
Lone Goat. Tell us about that. Who's in it and how did they get together?
Well, that's my band, and for the most part, I have two guitar players. I have a guy named Paul Houston and another guy named Kerry Park, and then I have a drummer named Bill Brennenstuhl and a bass player named Nick Zingraff. And we've all been playing together for a while now, and it's Bill. I've known some of these guys for 10, 15 years and have been playing off and on for that amount of years, and it isn't a chore. We just get together, and it's easy and fun, and nobody's, moaning and crying about anything. It's just, it's the best group of, of players and guys. I couldn't ask for a more talented and easier to get along group of guys. All very, different in their talents in terms of their fortes and everything, but you put it together and they can really play any style of music and put it across. So
if I'm driving around on the highways of California, am I going to see the Sean Wiggins and Lone Goat big van that huge big motorhome?
No, I drive a little VW Golf, and I can fit half of the band equipment in it, and then the other half travels with the drummer and the bass player. real life.
It is real life. Okay, those people who think that politics or entertainment is pure, wonderful, there's travel, and travel ain't
travel
fun
and
necessarily.
It's basic.
All right. I'm sorry, but we're out of time. Sean, thank you very much for joining us on With Respect.
Thank you.
I hope you do come back many, many times to the Midwest because we like your style of music and your performance. So Remember, this is With Respect. We're on every Sunday and Thursday. And remember our mantra until next time. If you show respect to other people, they will show respect to you.